thank you for joining us here on KBBI AM 890 Homer on this Wednesday. This is the Coffee Table. I'm Quentin Chandler, and I am in the studio with three of our city council candidates for election year 2015. We have Joni Wise. Hi, Joni.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us, Joni. Donna Adderhold.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And current city council member, Bo Burgess.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, Bo. So, first, I would just like to lay out the rules here. We're not doing a debate, but we can have a little bit of discussion. Please let everybody answer questions completely before you let me know you want to chime in. And, let's just have some fun with this. First, I want to go ahead and go to each of you and kind of get a feel for what issues are specifically you are interested in bringing forward at the city council if you are elected, and what issues are kind of central to your campaigns. Let's start with you, Joni.
I would like to see us cut spending. I would like to see us take our city's economic, I would like to advance it. I would like to see a new harbor be put in for the commercial fishermen. I think we're losing a lot of money here in this town by not helping them be able to work on their boats here. They don't have the access to things that they have in Seattle or Kodiak, and we need to make that possible to build our economy. And I'd like to see that to be my main issue here when I hit city council.
Thank you very much, Joni. And Donna, what is kind of central to your campaign?
I don't really have a specific issue. I think that there's a number of things right now that the city faces, and there will be other things in upcoming years. Clearly, one of the biggest right now is balancing our budget. And I think at this point, everything's on the table in terms of balancing the budget, and needs to be. And I'm hoping that the community gets very engaged with the public process that's coming up to figure out how to balance our budget, whether it be cutting city services or adding taxes of some sort.
Thank you very much, Donna. And Bo, you are running to kind of hold on to your current seat. Wondering, can you tell us a little bit about what you think is really important moving forward here for the next term if you are reelected?
I think Donna did a really good job of covering the hot button issue. I couldn't agree with everything she said more. Really everything needs to be on the table in the budget discussion. And we also need to make sure that we engage the public from a very factual and clear standpoint. There's simply cutting the budget's probably not going to solve our budget problems so long as we want to have EMS or roads or things like that. Joni's right. Supporting the harbor is kind of our core enterprise. It's a great thing to look at. But also, keeping tabs on kind of the behind-the-scenes bureaucratic aspects of government are important, too. You want to keep a close tab on the city attorney. One of the best ways to save money in the city of Homer is to make sure that you're not making decisions that result in costly legal situations later. There are lots and lots of things to keep in mind there. But the budget's the big one, and mostly not doing things prudently will be the challenge, I think, for the next city council. It's not about what you want to do it as a city council person. It's about what you want to make sure doesn't get done.
Got you. Interesting viewpoint there. So I think we're all on the same page. The financial future of the city and the current budget shortfall is basically the most important issue on a lot of people's minds, and it seems like that's what it is what's on your minds today. I'm going to start out with that. The city budget is, we're looking at a near $1 million shortfall this year. What, Joni, would you as a city council member be able to add to this conversation of how to make our budget balance out, and to how to secure a balanced budget for future years?
Well, one, I would say we have to grow our base here and our economy. We can't keep raising taxes on the people here in town, because that will make them stop spending their money. Businesses cannot be taxed over and over and over again, and we can't keep raising those things. We own two businesses. You can't continue to raise your prices because taxing, and then people will stop using you. People will stop spending, and then that makes our city hurt. What we need to do is, What we need to do is we just need to start cutting things. I know it's going to be hard. Like Nancy Hillstrand said in the meeting, she says, be fearless in cutting. And I believe that's the case. I know there'll be legal ramifications, maybe. But I think Homer's ready for people to be like, listen, the buildings we're building are too big. We don't have the economy to support buildings that we're building, and we need to cut those things out. And we need to be looking at ways to increase our revenue without burdening the taxpayers more.
Got you. So a couple of interesting things that you mentioned there. I want to go straight to the cuts you were mentioning. The city council's the city council's position right now, as I understand it, is that the budget has been trimmed over the years to be as lean as it, well, maybe not as lean as it could possibly be, but very lean. What do you think we could still cut to, kind of help out the situation?
All right, well, I'm going to make some people unhappy here, but I think a lot of our nonprofits that we support through our city can get personal funding through private enterprises and not the city. I think we can cut there. I think they're great things. Don't get me wrong. We've used them when we fostered through our kids, like Sprout. I know with Haven House, we have one of my kids' birth moms has used that place. They're great places, but I also think that there's people in Homer that will support it privately without having to use city funds.
Got you. And one more thing, and I'll move on from you. Wondering if you could tell me what businesses that you own.
What I'm thinking?
What businesses you own?
Oh, sorry. My husband and me, we own Marty Wise Electrical. So that's the business we run year-round. And then we also have our commercial fishing operation in the summertime. My husband drift gill nets.
All right. Thanks so much. And Donna, how about you? What do you think we can do to tackle this budget situation we have right now?
Well, I guess I differ a bit from Joni in that, I want to have a good economy here too. I also think that we need to have a good quality of life, and I think certainly, if I were going to cut, I agree with Joni that the first place to look is the nonprofits, which is a very sad thing to do, but that's where we are. We need to focus on our core services. However, I do think that we're going to have to be looking at raising taxes in some way, shape, or form. I've looked at it. I can't see any way around it. However, we do need to have good business in this city, and we need a good quality of life as well. And we have that here, but we need to maintain it. I think, I would also agree with something that Beau said earlier is, choosing what not to do in the future. And, I think, we have roads that we're building. We build those roads. We need to keep maintaining them. And we're having a hard time maintaining them with the staff that we have at this point. So I think that really, looking at the capital improvement plan and do we really want these things on? Do we really want to build these things? Do we really want them in the capital improvement plan?
Gotcha. And we have a lot to talk about there. But we're going to go over to Beau now. Beau, same spiel. I think you pretty much know what we're asking here.
Yeah, absolutely. One point of clarification I think gets missed in these discussions a lot is that the budget shortfall is probably going to be much more than $1 million. If you consider the fact that the city of Homer hasn't been adequately funding its depreciation reserves for over 8 years, if you were to fund your depreciation reserves at a level that adequately recapitalize just your core basic infrastructure, that budget shortfall is probably going to be more than twice $1 million. I don't have an exact figure, but there's that to consider as well. One thing just wanted to light on, since everyone kind of brought up the core key points here before, most city buildings that are constructed are often not constructed with city funds, like the Harbor Master building, a potential public safety building, even a lot of water and sewer infrastructure. A lot of that stuff gets covered by state funding. So when you really are looking at places to cut in the budget, it's not an issue of, oh, we shouldn't use city funds to build a new building. It's really, what's the most efficient way to maintain core infrastructure from an operating standpoint? That's really where you're looking at in a budget. Nonprofits, it'd be great to say that cutting them eliminated a huge gap in the budget. They account for less than 1%. I think we should be very very keen on seeing where dollars go out the door, where do they generate revenue. There's certainly money that we contribute to for-profit, non-profit, lots of different entities within the city or that we use for services that result in money coming back to the city, kind of like advertising or things like that. There are others that don't necessarily offer a service that we should think about cutting. But police, fire, harbor, port and harbor, water and sewer, that's where the money goes. Police department accounts for almost 30% of the budget. So if people are really serious about cutting, those are the services we're going to cut. We're going to see fewer police officers on the street. We're going to see less prevention, education in schools, things like that. The main body that needs to be consulted as we consider whether we want to increase revenues or reduce costs is the public. I think Mayor Wythe is doing a pretty good job right now in bringing the public into that process, making sure that the facts and good information are there. And you know, it's been surprisingly sobering and really comforting just to see that when you give members of the public good information, they come to some very rational conclusions. And I think we as city council people should listen to what they say and basically follow their recommendations, have a good process. And just one quick final plug, I really think the best way to support local business is by not necessarily your overarching tax regime, but by making sure that your regulatory environment doesn't put undue administrative burden on local business. I mean, everyone is already going to fill out a sales tax return, but if you make everybody jump through a little hoop, a little fee there, you nickel and dime them, that's really what shuts down small business and costs a lot of money.
Got you. And you said a lot there, Bill. I'm going to see if I can wade through a couple of the things. First, well, yeah, we're talking a lot of people. So far, we've already mentioned, you know, in a roundabout way, the public safety building. And I'm wondering if you can tell me how likely is it that we could get other funds other than city funds to pay for the public safety building. I believe in the projections on the CIP right now, there is around a little bit more than $1 million that could come from state funds. That was a projection made back, I believe, before 2014. So where, you know, how likely is it that we can get to, you know, the, I believe it's about a $12 million total is the estimate now?
We've just approached the point where we could actually even begin to put out bids to see what it would actually cost to build the building. But to answer your question, how likely is it to build the public safety building? Extremely unlikely at this point. I think the reason that myself, and I'll go out on a limb here, and other council members supported getting the public safety building to the design level that it's at now is this was the minimum level we needed to actually bring in outside funds. In my mind, the most likely funding source for a public safety building is actually federal funds. It's FEMA or Homeland Security. They have a lot of programs that support operation centers and public safety buildings, and it's a great way to leverage those funds, which is why I think the council and myself have been proponents of advancing that to a high CIP. Just because it's a high priority on the CIP list doesn't mean we want to spend money on it, nor should we necessarily use any city money to do that. But it's a great likely opportunity. Like, we just got $110,000 to put in a backup generator for the library. That is federal funding. So I think federal is the likely one there.
Gotcha. And Joni, I want to come back to you. You said that basically you are not for raising taxes. You don't want to place an undue burden on businesses. Wondering, what do you think about taxes, tax increases for on the individual level, say sales tax or taxes on non-prepared foods?
Yeah, you know, I'm just straight against it. Yeah, I know it's not, the people here will probably disagree with me on this, but I think the more and more you tax, the more and more you're going to spend, because that's what you get. It's just like most people when they budget, and this is known for most households. If you actually look at them, if you make $50,000 a year, you're most likely spending $55,000 to $60,000. And I feel like our city government has been that way. I feel like our state government has been that way. We cannot just continue to raise, because then we'll be like, oh, look at all this money we have. Let's now spend that, instead of being like, oh, maybe we should just stay at the budget we've had, and then we'll just have an overrun of money. And we don't do that. So to just continue to raise taxes, we'll just spend more. That's how I feel about it.
Got you. And you believe that without raising taxes, there is a way to balance that budget?
I think there is. We need to take this city, if we're going to have the buildings we have, and I know he says a lot of it comes from federal monies, and I have looked at all that and seen that, but it costs a lot of money to actually run those buildings and to heat those buildings and to do a lot of things with those buildings. So even if the buildings are actually covered, which I don't believe they're all covered under federal grants and things, even if they are covered, it takes a lot of money to actually run those huge buildings, and that has to come from somewhere, and that's from our pockets. I think we need to be business-minded here in this town, and we need to grow our economy, period, and I think that will help our city's budget.
All right. Well, I'm going to back up just a tad, and we're going to look at the public safety building. I think I know where you're going with this, but I want to put it to you. You know, do you think we should continue devoting resources to looking at finishing a design for the public safety building and possibly, you know, going into construction?
I know. It's hard to not jump in. I know we have these rules where we're like, oh, I just want to jump in here. But, yes, I do not think we should be spending any money to actually even go into the design building, because at this point, if we take our money, we put it into the design, and we say, okay, we're not going to do this for 5 years. Well, in 5 years, codes and things will change that we will have to then go back, take those plans, and spend more money to redo those plans. It just seems foolish to me to spend money if we're not going to actually move forward on a building right now. We should be saving that money. And when we get to the point where we actually have the funds to build that building, then we decide to spend the money to do designs.
Got you. Donna, what about you? What do you think about the current plan to move forward on this design for the public safety building?
I agree with where the city is going at this point to, you know, get to 35% design on the public safety building. That there's going to be a public meeting coming up in October, that I think it's October anyway, for the public to be able to get a look at that, you know, where we are with the design of the building, and you get it to a place where we as a community can make a decision on whether we want to move forward with it. And, you know, it is a need in our city at this point in time to have adequate facilities for minimally for our police, and then, you know, if we could phase it in maybe down the road the fire. There's some things in the public safety building current preliminary design that I've seen that I question the value. However, obviously police and fire are very important to our community, and I think they need to be in safe and adequate buildings.
Thank you very much, Donna. And you, Bo, do you think that you know, the council is taking a wise direction right now in you know, continuing towards this 35% design on the public safety building?
Well, just to be clear, the council's already made the decision, I think, to take it to 35% design, and the funds have already been allocated. So realistically, those of us sitting here or any potential candidate debating this, I think we're probably all likely to be in the same boat, which is we shouldn't spend any more money on a public safety building plan or design until we have significant input from the public. But I do think the current council was prudent to bring it to this point, because this was the minimum level to get it to a point where the public could have an informed discussion about what it really is and is not. And again, you know, if you're going to sit here, if you're going to talk about cutting or not cutting, it's fire, EMS, core services. And right now, I mean, I could tell you horror stories. Ask anyone who works in dispatch at our current public safety facilities, the current police station. Those facilities are atrocious. We regularly have prisoners escape and run around the facility. We've had serious emergencies within the building during dispatch calls. You know, this is life and property stuff here. It's if we're going to fund a police department, we need to provide adequate facilities. Granted, if we don't want to fund a police department or we want to reduce our operational spending on that, as Joni points out, then that's what should be seriously considered.
Got you. All right. First, before we continue this, I'm going to open up our phone lines for anybody who wants to call in and pose a question or comment on some of these issues. You can call locally 235-7721 here on the coffee table, or you can call us toll-free 1-800-979-5524. We have the three of the six city council candidates here in the studio today. So, Joni, if we, yes, you know, after posing the issue to the public, if we scrap the public safety building, just don't move forward on it at all, what options do you think we have for the, you know, our emergency responders here in the city who are working in these not dilapidated, but outdated buildings that have some real structural issues.
Yeah, let me first start off by saying it comes across that from what they're saying here, that I don't support the police department. I don't support the building. My actual best friend is a wife of a cop here in town. I actually have a lot of friends in the police station, and they know my view on this. And I will tell you that a lot of them believe that the extravagance of the building, the cost of the building is ridiculous, and we shouldn't be spending that much money on a building for them. However, I do believe that they need adequate place to have a jail and stuff. I don't believe it's as scary as Bo just kind of made it out to be. I've not heard a lot of people escaping and stuff. I know they've had a couple issues, but it's Homer. It's a fairly safe town. I don't feel like we live in downtown Seattle here. So I think there's places that we could probably improve their facility, spend a quarter of the money maybe. I just think there's other ways to go about this and maybe not do such a grand building that they're talking about with a laundromat and a huge gym facility. We have the Bay Club. We have laundromats here in town. They have washers and dryers in their house. I don't know. I just feel like personal responsibility is key here with people, and we should not just be throwing money at huge buildings that we don't need here in Homer, period.
Thank you, Joni. Donna, you... Sorry about that.
Sorry.
Donna, you already said that you are waiting. You think we should kind of wait to see what the public's opinion on this building is. But the same question. Do you think that there is a recourse for us if we decide not to move forward with this current public safety building?
Can you define recourse? I mean,
is there some other option we can pursue to, kind of help our emergency responders with the current status of their buildings right now?
Well, we could. I have not been through either of the buildings. I wish I had, but I have not yet. What I understand is that, I know that the fire department has been remodeled several times. I assume that the police station has been remodeled several times, and they've probably reached their limit to where they can go with any remodeling. And I think that it sounds to me, from what I've heard, there's some issues related to the police station that are that make the building just unhealthy, the ventilation system for one. And so I think. Obviously the police and fire departments have been in those buildings for a number of years. They can stay in those buildings. It's just the buildings have reached their useful life, and it's time to be looking at replacing them. So.
So you just say we just need to have a new building.
The option would be another remodel potentially, and. What's the cost of that? So if we're spending an equal amount of money to remodel a building that is still, the bones of that building are still not in good shape, then, that doesn't feel like a solution to me.
Right. Bo, what are your thoughts? Do you think that we can, if we don't pursue the current design of the public safety building we're looking at, if we, decided to go another route, is there another route that can still meet the needs of the fire, the police department, and EMS?
Well, there's a lot here to cover, but, I basically say, I'd reframe the conversation again to say the choice is to get the public safety building current plan to the point where the public can make an informed decision. I don't think anyone wants to spend a bunch of local money or even close to what the projected amounts are to build the building as currently designed. So I think it's really just getting it to a point where we could leverage federal or state funds. That's the goal here. We're pretty much done with that process. Now the discussion can begin. As far as what we would do with current facilities, the current fire facility is decent. It's adequate. It's not going to be for much longer. If we ever wanted to have buildings taller than 36 feet in Homer, we're going to need a different building or a larger space. Now, the police station is far less than adequate. I would use the word dilapidated here. And I agree with what both candidates have said, but the economic return on investment for pouring $1, $2, $3 million to remodel the police station is basically money we don't get back. Why pour more money into a dilapidated building? As a general contractor here in Homer, I'm going to relate to you a common situation I come across all the time. I come up to someone's house, they're wanting to do an extensive remodel to their home, and I tell them, you know, it will literally cost you more to remodel this house than it would for me to come in, tear it down, build it from scratch. And that is a common occurrence with a lot of properties here in Homer just because of the history of our building standards here. And that holds true for our police station. Our dollars are going to be better spent. We're going to get a better ROI to build a new building than we probably would to remodel the police station. That being said, the building's not on fire. It's time to begin what's, I'm sure, going to be a long and public process.
Right, and this conversation is going to drag on for quite some time. So I believe we've pretty much covered it for now. I want to go back to revenue generating and balancing the budget. As we already kind of established, that is pretty much the major issue facing us right now. Joni, you said you're not for raising taxes, pretty much. And Donna, I'm wondering, are there any taxes that, or any tax options that you would be in favor of, or that you would advocate if you made it to city council?
I don't know that I advocate for one in particular. I think it's going to take a combination. And, I want to hear from the city, actually. I plan on being at the city meetings to talk about budget revenue sources and, I want to hear what the public has to say. I think that the conversation that City Council had on Monday, I agree with the direction that they were headed at the end of the council meeting there. And I think right now, as I said earlier, everything needs to be on the table. Just have a conversation about it.
What about you, Bill? Any revenue generating options that you think would be good for the city?
I can't say that I have a preference or a lack of preference at this point, but I certainly have been informed by the public process the council's already had and engaging hundreds of local people via online survey and then our town hall meeting. And the things that most people leaned towards were actually a sales tax increase, raising certain fee structures, and also a bed tax. Of those, and realistically, those are a sales tax increase, a property tax increase, or some form of bed tax, which is a sales tax, are your main options for raising revenue. Anything else you can't really implement in the short term. Nothing else is really going to stop the budget, unless you make major cuts, you're not going to balance the budget. That being said, of those options, I would tend to favor a sales tax increase, or particularly a seasonal sales tax increase. Here's why. Property taxes hurt all of us here locally. There's no reason to increase our property taxes beyond where they are. You really are going to push property development outside the city if you do that. Bed tax, I don't like the idea of a bed tax because it takes away from our economic competitiveness as a tourist destination. And I just personally don't like the idea of discriminating against one small user group with a tax. I also think if you implement a bed tax, you're going to force a lot of accommodation outside the city of Homer, which is just a bad idea. That being said, Soldovia and others have found great benefit in a seasonal sales tax. I think if we're going to raise revenues, and I don't know that we necessarily need to do that, there's lots on the table, but if we're going to do that, a seasonal sales tax is probably our best bet, combined with ongoing work to increase our sin tax structure for things like cannabis, alcohol, tobacco. I'm on the Cannabis Advisory Commission. I definitely think you're going to be seeing recommendations come down the pipeline there soon to increase taxes on those items.
Thank you very much, Bill. Joni, I want to change the conversation a little bit. We're going to talk about improving the quality of life here in Homer. And you have mentioned that is one of the things that you think is really important and would very much like to advocate if you got onto the city council. But how do you think the city council here in Homer can do that?
Really, I think the city council's job is to just listen to the people here in town and to hear what they say, and not just the certain people that actually attend these meetings. I feel like there's a huge group of us, me included, that maybe just listen to it on the radio and can't get out. I have 6 kids right now, and And I don't have the time, a lot of the time, to get involved or to give my opinions. And I know there's a huge number of us that are just like that. We don't take the time, and I'm guilty of this also, and that's why I'm running, because I need to just throw my hat in the ring here and actually do something. But, you know, a lot of us don't give our opinions to the city council, and I think we really need to figure out how to reach those people who are busy doing their jobs and busy raising kids, who aren't retired and don't have time to sit down here and just listen or give their opinions about what makes this town great. And I think Homer's a phenomenal town to live in. It's great. You know so many people. Everybody loves each other. Like I said in my statement, this town is kind. Everybody, you know, people, if people pass away here in town, this town just rallies around those people, their families. It's just a great place to live. And I would like to see the city council really just try to make it possible for families to afford to live here. I feel like this city has, you know, we have the highest population of seniors here in the state of Alaska. And it's just not a place where it's family friendly, I feel, in certain areas. It's very expensive. I feel like our city needs to do more to see things lowered to make it possible for families to live here. The taxes are just... they're just a killer. Property taxes, houses, it's been driven up here. And I know it's become a retirement area, one of the most popular retirement areas, and I know that's why prices has risen. And I would just like to see somehow for the council to, make it possible for families to move in here and be more family friendly.
I see. And you believe one of the ways to do that is for city council to be more approachable and to listen more to these groups that you're speaking of, the single young families, younger families, and just everybody, actually.
Yeah, and you know, it's hard because you know, you say something like, well, we put it out there on the internet to see what they think, these polls and stuff. Well, I've never seen a poll, so I'm not sure where they're actually reaching these people. And I can tell you right now that the majority of the people I've talked with in my sphere of people never seen these polls. So I feel like our city's not reaching a big group of people. They're not hearing their opinions from. I feel like there's a certain group that come down and really are vocal, and that's great. I commend them for that, because you need to be vocal, and hence why I'm running. I'm going to start getting way more vocal here.
Thank you, Joni. And Donna, what about you? Do you think that there are ways the city council can improve the quality of life here in Homer? Do you think that, as Joni said, the city could do a better job of reaching residents and listening to their concerns?
Well, there's a lot there. So first of all, related to quality of life, I agree with Joni that we have a wonderful quality of life here. I mean, that's what brought me down to Homer. It's what brings a lot of people to Homer, is this is it's a beautiful place to live, and it's the diversity of the people here, the fact that we can all disagree one moment and rally around somebody that we disagree with in their time of need. Those things are really wonderful about this community, and city government is not going to legislate that. I think certainly having as many people involved in city government as possible, it definitely helps the city know where the people want to go to maintain the quality of life that we have. You know, I think each individual sees quality of life in a slightly different way. You know, what it means to me may be different from what it means to Joni. I don't know. But we do have that. And I think that there is plenty of opportunity for people, anyone to participate in city government, and I encourage everybody to do that. However, there are times that maybe the word doesn't get out, or maybe there are certain topics that don't get that the only time that they're discussed is at a city council meeting, and I do believe on some issues there should be a larger public process to get input. And one of the examples I'll give there is the Waddell Way road extension project. There really was not a public process associated with that. It just pretty much just went through Planning Commission and then the City Council. And I would have liked to have seen an actual public meeting that was advertised for people to come in and in a more open house forum to talk about that. And I'd like to see the city do a little bit more of that when we're talking about a project to really get input from the city.
Thank you, Donna. Joni, did you have something you wanted to check on there?
I just wanted to say when she said city government's not going to help our way of life, and I absolutely totally agree there. I don't want to come across as saying that I feel like our city will improve our way of life. You make your life what you make it, and I think less government actually will improve our life. Honestly, I just wanted to be very clear where I stood on that.
I appreciate it, Joni. And Bo, what about you? Do you think that the City Council can affect quality of life here in Homer for the better?
I believe they can, largely by not trying to affect quality of life for the better. I really like a lot of what Joni said in terms of the fact that there is this huge group of people who do not participate in local government via the idea that they don't have access, and I disagree on that. I think that the council and the local government do a lot to put out what they are doing. We certainly have had hundreds of people who come and participate in these meetings to give input. That being said, I still think the majority of people who have an opinion don't come, don't give input, or don't know that they can, or are just busy like the rest of us. And that's totally legitimate. That needs to be taken into account by whoever sits at that council table. I actually feel like my record personally unique amongst almost all the other council members there is someone who does that. If you look at the positions that I've taken on the beach policy issue, for instance, we had a very relatively small vocal majority of people come in and say, we got to close vehicle access and beach access to all beaches in Homer, even though that was well beyond the recommendations of even the beach policy task force. I advocated waiting. Everyone I talked to outside of council said, hey, we should probably have some beaches where people can go and gather coal, or we can preserve beach access. I've done this on issue after issue. I've been willing to stand up and be vocal for the people who aren't, like Joni was saying, people who have the time, maybe the discretionary income, to be present in the political process. We always have to keep those other people in mind. But by and large, effective governance at the council level means minimal regulatory burden, staying out of people's way, and focusing on when we're going to decide to do things with government, like police, like EMS, like a port and harbor. We fund it properly, we do it well, so we don't discredit the government process.
Thank you very much, Bo. And it's like you're reading my mind here. The next big topic I wanted to bring up was the beach policy while we still have time. There's a lot we have to go through, but I think this is one of those things that is just a hot button issue, and we have to have some time to talk about. So, Joni, I want to go to you. What do you think about, changing policy on our beaches? There are an entire slew of issues that people take issue, problems with. And some people just don't want to change anything at all. Let's start with motor vehicles. Do you think that we should, change our rules for motor vehicle access on the beach?
This whole thing kind of frustrates me, because I feel like, where do we do our self-regulation in our places that we live? Like me, I live on Sterling Highway, and boy, do I get mad that people speed up that road. But I do not go into my Homer City Council and ask them to close down Sterling Highway in front of my house to people who are speeding, because I choose to live there. If I don't like where I live, or I don't like something's going on, one, I could build a fence and try to keep my kids safer that way, or two, I could move. And so when I hear people say things like, there's people partying on the beaches in front of our house and it's private property, and I understand that. I get that there's those irresponsible kids out there, and even irresponsible adults, but we're not going to change those people by putting more regulations on those of us who will follow the rules and will keep our dogs leashed from going into the bird habitats and won't have big party ragers on the beach and affect the wildlife or affect people's properties down there. I feel like our city should not be trying to close down things for those who are responsible. You know, we can't make enough rules for people to follow. People who are not going to follow the rules are not going to follow the rules, no matter how many we put on them. And if those people have private property, they should put a fence up. They should be out there talking to these people. They should call the cops. I mean, they have cell phones. Call them. Self-regulation. It's key here.
Got you. And so I'm going to take, just guess. You're saying you wouldn't before say a rule that says people have to leash their dogs when they're on the beach, that you wouldn't be for making a pedestrian zone on the beach. I'm just asking. What do you think about those things?
Well, you'd probably guess correctly on that. Mm-hmm. I think again, people are going to do what they want to do, and especially here in Homer, we have a really eclectic group of people here, I'll say, in Homer, and we have the people who have been here for generations, four or five generations back, or in my husband's case, three generations back, and you know, they don't want to be burdened by all these rules. They go down there, they get coal, they have their trucks, they've done it forever. Why now put a restriction on them because a few people can't be controlled and are down there destroying things? That's not going to change. When I was in high school, that same thing happened. People will grow up, and there'll be a whole nother group of teenagers that will come in and do these same things. It's lack of parenting, in my opinion, and we're not going to help that. So there's nothing you're going to do that's going to make people obey the law if they're not going to, period.
Thanks, Joni. And Donna, what do you think? Are there some rules that we need to impose on our beaches to change some of these issues that people have raised at the city council level?
Yeah, I do think we need to make some changes. The Parks and Recreation Commission had countless meetings to gather input from as many types of people as they possibly could, and then they brought that to the city council, and now it's back in the lap of the city council. And they provided recommendations that I think city council needs to really look very closely at and decide how to move forward. The fact that this is an issue shows that it is something that the city needs to deal with. Bishop's Beach in particular, we've got a city parcel that provides access, direct vehicular access to the beach, as well as pedestrian access. That beach is getting loved to death. I mean, it's a wonderful place, and it's a wonderful place to have access. But because it's being loved to death, we need to pull back and say, you know, what's acceptable? And, you know, how much driving on the beach is acceptable? And I think we also, since we are, it's a city parcel that's sandwiched between private parcels, rather, and a federal parcel, we need to be a good neighbor. And right now, we're not being a good neighbor to those private property owners. And I think also, most people don't know that the Fish and Wildlife Service is on one side, and that the land on the other side is privately owned, except for the parcel that's now kind of cordoned off with rocks. So I think, you know, there's an education piece there just to let people know that, hey, you're crossing private property and you need to respect that. So it's hard to legislate respect, and some people are going to be respectful and others are not. But I think that the city definitely needs to take action relative to their the parcel it owns.
Got you. And do you know what specific actions you yourself would recommend if you were on the city council?
You know, there's an idea that I have heard from several people that I think is a good idea. I'm not interested in telling people you cannot go collect coal, or that you, if you own a beach parcel farther down, that you cannot access that parcel via the beach. But if we has, and I know that the police department isn't really in favor of this, but if there were some sort of permit system that you had to go to the police or whoever's going to issue these permits, receive some educational materials on what can and where the private property is, what the rules are, what the speed limit is, where you can and cannot be on the beach, what's safe, habitat issues, whatever. And then you sign that educational information and you get your permit. Those people can then drive on the beach. It makes the enforcement much easier.
Thank you. And Bo, what do you think about this? These multiple issues with our beaches, our beach policy. What do you think should be changed, if anything?
Well, it's an incredibly complex issue, so I will do my best to say less than 5% of what I could say about the issue. Basically, I largely agree with what Joni said. I think that when you have commons, when you basically have, and let's be perfectly clear, the area below the mean high tide mark on Bishop's Beach is free access. There are prescriptive easements there. People can go there. That is not private property. Or even if it is, the prescriptive easement still exists. And there's huge legal ramifications here about giving critical habitat area or a state government or a federal body jurisdiction over areas that they don't have jurisdiction over. At the end of the day, Michael Armstrong at Homer News said it best, we're not really going to know who has final jurisdiction until someone gets a ticket from the state troopers or Fish and Wildlife and it goes through the courts. But at the end of the day, the public has access to our beaches. I think that we should maintain large public access on Bishop's Beach. I think vehicles should be allowed. I think a good compromise is to close off via a physical barrier access to the protected wildlife and areas and wetlands that the federal government owns and manages as such to the left. So the area where driving is already discouraged or not allowed, there's no coal value there. It's a good compromise. We've already set that aside as critical migratory bird habitat. So I think there's a way to largely follow the recommendations of the task force here and not just arbitrarily say, oh, well, a few bad eggs are doing donuts on Bishop's Beach, we're going to close off Bishop's Beach access to everyone. I don't think that's a reasonable solution. Although I largely like Donna's intent with a permit system, I think this is exactly the kind of thing that council and government needs to avoid. One-off scenarios that create a huge administrative burden. If we talk about a permitting system, the amount of resources that have to go into the police, the time burden, I mean, all we really have at the end of the day is our time. Every time I have to jump through another government or bureaucratic hoop to do what I want to do, unless there's a really good sound reason for that, public safety, environmental quality, I think we really should avoid those scenarios. I think the money would be better spent that we would spend on a permitting system to actually put some enforcement down on the beach, which is the real issue. I mean, most of these issues don't stem from restricting access, not restricting access. The issues stem from the fact that our police officers are overtasked. They don't have the ability to respond to a party on the beach when there's a serious 911 emergency somewhere else. We don't have a code enforcement officer to hand out, doggy poo bags because we're not paying for a full-time code enforcement officer. Those are the real issues. So the discussion shouldn't be, should we close off access because we can't afford to enforce our own laws? By the way, we do have leash laws, we do have litter laws, we do have traffic laws, all of which do apply to the beach. If they were just enforced, a lot of these issues would be solved. Enforcement is where we need to focus if we want to have a serious discussion about this.
Thanks, Bo. And we are running out of time, but first I want to go over to a caller on line one, Bob. Thanks for waiting on us, Bob. What would you like to put to the council candidates?
I want to wish Joni the very best in her efforts here. The country's $17 trillion in debt. The state is $3 billion in arrears every year now, and the city of Homer is falling right in line with that. And I don't understand why governments can't budget their money and what they do, the things they do to keep from going in such huge debt all the time. So that's just I'm going to cover that point. What I wanted to know is if the city funds anything for the schools, if any of that's coming out of the budget. And the last thing I wanted to say was that, yes, leave the Bishop's Beach open to the right for the people that get cold. And that's about it.
Thank you very much, Bob. And I believe your question was on the city's involvement with the schools, and that is primarily a borough responsibility, borough and state funding the schools. But Bo, I think you had something you wanted to add there.
Oh, I was just going to chime in and say, yeah, it's completely budget and state. The city does have some community schools, which we utilize those facilities, but it's all completely state. As far as the debt situation of the city of Homer, it's worth people to knowing the majority of city of Homer's debt is tied up in service funds, water and sewer, paying off old debt that's at really low interest. From a financial standpoint, I would encourage people to read, the audits of the city of Homer. City of Homer's doing a pretty good job budgeting. I mean, the reason you do budget, the reason you have reserves is to weather difficult periods without huge changes in operational spending. City of Homer's not in a great position, but we don't have a high debt burden, and people should know that.
Joni, Donna, we'll start with you, Donna. Was there anything else that you wanted to did you want to add a comment to Bob's the issues Bob raised here?
No.
Okay, and Joni?
No, I just want to thank him for his comment. Thank you very much, Bob.
All right, and we have, before we move on, we have Don on line two. Don, thanks for calling in.
Absolutely. Say, I'm listening to Bo. I think he's really intelligent on a lot of his comments, no doubt. But there's too much focus, possibly, on the physical buildings or the structure. I think with today's resources, it's more about the team and the people and the mobile technology. Seems to be the future anyway, and I think these departments should be able to operate mobile, kind of like the firefighters do, like a MASH unit. But anyway, and then as far as the budget asset spending, I think we need to focus on preventive maintenance, like Bo said. And I've got some real good examples. I'm going to apply for a job with the Public Works, and I'm going to bring them some pictures. Anyway, great program. Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much for calling in, Don. All right, before we wrap up, we have about 8 minutes left in the show. I want to go to a couple more issues. First, everyone is really concerned with environmental shifts, especially the people here in Homer, being as close to the sea as we are and as dependent as we are on the ocean. Wondering if you guys have ideas on how the city of Homer can kind of move forward and adapt. Looking at these environmental shifts, we have ocean acidification. We're seeing large numbers of beached whales, otters, also dead, dying shorebirds. Some troublesome signs that we're seeing, but we're looking at the face of climate change, and I'm wondering if you guys have ideas on where the city can go looking at those issues. Joni, let's start with you.
I'm gonna. Again, probably make quite a few people mad here. I don't honestly feel like we're more in a climate change as we are in a climate pattern here. I feel like if you look back at certain years that we've had these same patterns happen. I just want to keep reiterating this just be responsible for yourself. I feel like if people would take responsibility for their places around them, keep their litter off the beach, be responsible, like I try to be, and I know I'm trying to teach my little kiddos how to be, that will go a long way in helping our Earth. I'll recycle, I'll do whatever it takes in order to keep our planet great. I'm not opposed to any of those things. We definitely need to be responsible, but there also needs to be where we're not just totally swinging the pendulum in one direction and saying, well, our Earth is just going down. Right now we're in a warming trend, I feel, and I feel like it will swing back into a cooler trend like we have in the past.
Got you. So you're saying personal responsibility is the key here?
Is the key, yes.
Thank you very much, Joni. And Donna, what do you think as far as the city council's ability to kind of adapt, kind of guide the city of Homer through these current changes we're seeing?
Well, I disagree a bit with Joni in that we are in the midst of climate change, and we're seeing some pretty unprecedented changes in our ocean, and I feel that it's going to affect has the potential to affect Homer very greatly, because a large part of our economy is based on commercial and sport fishing. And the things that are potentially happening in our ocean, and of course the mariculture as well, things that are happening in our ocean are going to have a huge effect on the residents of Homer. There's, you know, other than we have the city of Homer has its climate action plan, and I think we need to follow the plan that we already have in place and maybe evaluate, you know, how we're doing with that plan. And you know, I think, you know, having conversations with our residents about, you know, how to maintain our resiliency, particularly with our port and harbor. I had another point and it just went right straight out of my head.
Happens to me all the time.
I think there's, you know, we need to be paying attention as a city, and we also need to be considerate of, you know, what we can do as a city to reduce our own carbon footprint, which will hopefully also reduce our overall costs.
Thank you, Donna. And Bo, we are running low on time, but I want to give you an opportunity as well. What do you think the City Council can do to kind of adapt to environmental changes and guide the City of Homer through those?
Well, you saved the most complex question for last, so I like that. I definitely think that climate change is real. It's absolutely happening. I also think that it's not a matter of prevention. It's also not a matter of mitigation. It's just a matter of adaptation. Luckily, I think we're actually in a really good spot in Homer, Alaska, to deal with the effects of climate change and to see it almost as an economic opportunity in a lot of ways. The City Council can move core infrastructure that is non-harbor related to higher ground out of the tsunami zone, which we should be doing anyway for adverse weather events, possible sea level rise. Obviously, there are going to be people out there who say, oh, we have isostatic rebound going on too, but I won't get into that. We also need to invest in our port and harbor facilities, because the Arctic is going to open up. It's going to be a transportation route. We are the closest port and harbor facility on these routes connected to a contiguous road system. It's a huge, tremendous economic opportunity for the City of Homer. We really need to invest in our port and harbor for those reasons. As far as mitigating at a city or municipal level, many of the costs, I mean, we're going to switch from a fishing economy to probably a local mariculture economy more and more. We're going to switch from a forest environment largely to a grassland environment over the next 100 years. Likely we need to be shifting more of our manufacturing and agricultural focus to local manufacturing and agriculture. The biggest thing we can do to mitigate, invest in our own energy independence. If we can invest in, and I think the natural gas was a great first step in being less dependent on fuels that come from very, very far, far away. But the more we can invest in being completely energy dependent, food independent here locally in Homer, the more we will mitigate the negative effects of climate change on ourselves.
Thank you, Bo, for you know, saying so much so quickly. I appreciate it. We are coming up on the end of the coffee table, about a minute out. Thank you very much for joining us. I would just like to go around. Like I said, we have about 1 minute. Do you guys have anything, any last words you'd like to leave the City of Homer with? Start with you, Joni.
You know, I will say that really quick, just to jump back into the climate change here, there's probably nobody more concerned about climate change than me. And I'm going to say it again. I honestly don't feel like it's happened. I feel like we're just in a pattern here. My husband fishes, and our oceans have been warm, and everybody has been saying how bad this is going to be for our salmon. And this was the largest salmon on record for Prince William Sound. We had almost 100 million fish caught. So say what you will about climate change, I think we're in a trend.
All right, I made a boo-boo. We have no more time left, so I'm just going to have to wrap it up there. Sorry, guys. Thank you for joining us here on the coffee table. We have Bullseye with Jesse Thorne coming up next. You are listening to our City Council candidates today.